Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway, and we're going to start out with a message that we got on the voicemail. And I have to apologize to the caller, Dylan. I didn't know this until his call, but it's kind of looking like the messages cut you off after exactly 3 minutes, which is really frustrating because I want to be able to get people's full thoughts, full experiences, and so forth. So I'm going to work on the technical side, see if I can figure out how to up that number. And if it's not possible, then be aware of that if you're calling in. Also, feel free to, for anybody that wants to send a message, feel free to record an MP3 or a WAV file or whatever kind of file on your smartphone and then email it to neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com so that we can be sure to get that on here, because I would really love to hear the rest of Dylan's thoughts. But here's Dylan, and just so you know, for a little context, this is my uncle Dylan, my mom's big brother, and so I was really excited to hear from him, and he's got some incredible comments. And unfortunately, he had a little bit of trouble with the trying to make a comment on the blog, on the website, and then also had some trouble on the calls because it kept cutting out at 3 minutes, which I think is unfortunate because I would love to hear the full comment that he wanted to make. But we got two. He made the phone call twice to catch up with some of the things that he was trying to say, and he's got some really good points, so I'm going to share that right now.
Hi, Chaz. This is Dylan Curtis, your uncle. But anyway, the idea of this reincarnation thing, I like the thoughts that you brought up, and especially about the merging sometimes of other spirits, that sometimes we can experience their thoughts or their experiences they had, they're so real to us. I think it's just like when we have a life review, so to speak, we are experience or see or feel not only what we've done in our life, but what we have done or how we've affected other people, especially if it's been in a bad way that really caused problems for them. It can be so real to us. And I think that can be maybe a good part of this. Some years ago, I had an acquaintance that belonged to the Church of Scientology. And we was kind of communicating back and forth some of our thoughts and our beliefs and that. And I liked a lot of their things, especially their scientific, the beliefs that really would kind of help the mind think better and do better, clear out a bunch of garbage, so to speak. But they go into this resurrection, or not resurrection, but...
Okay, and then the phone cut out right here, and then he called back, and here's the rest of the message.
Hi, Chaz. This is Dylan again, Dylan Curtis. I got cut off. It said goodbye, so I don't know if it seemed like it was only there on a few minutes. So I'll probably try to finish this up a little bit quicker. Perhaps I didn't have enough bars. I don't know. But anyway, as I was saying, this acquaintance, he told me how, they believe that they come back time and time again and to make their lives till they become perfect, and then they won't have to come down anymore. And I told him, I said, I'm sorry, but I can't believe in that, because I believe in Jesus Christ, and I believe in the atonement and the resurrection he made for us so that we would not have to do this. And I says, that defeats the purpose of that whole thing if we keep coming down and getting another body and going through this life. And I says, that to me, that's quite depressing to think that I would have to keep coming down time again, because this life is harsh sometimes, and yet it's wonderful too. But he says, but he had a memory, he says, was very real, where he died in this hotel. And he told me the details of such, and I says, I don't know what to tell you. But I says, I think somehow you've experienced the, you know, the death or the trauma of somebody else. And I told him, I says, we do believe that we existed long before we come down on the earth and went through many experiences. And maybe, I don't know, he tapped into a little bit of that, and after this life we will continue to progress and go on and on. And I told him, I says, I had a mother that, she would experience things that were, she'd have these dreams sometimes about, some were really good, but she says she had these dreams sometimes that were terrible. She dreamed one time about this man that was killed in an accident, and it scared her because it looked a lot like her son, Kay. And the next morning, she seen in the paper, she picked it up, this very accident, the airplane crash, and it did look a lot like her son, but it wasn't, thank heavens, and she didn't know why she had it, but she would have had these dreams once in a while, and she didn't like them. She says they scare her. But she had a lot of good dreams, too. And I think sometimes traumatic things we can merge into these, you know, especially maybe in the, we can get these signals or whatever you want to call them, experiences that may be somebody else's.
Okay, and unfortunately the phone cut off right at 3 minutes right there. And so that's all the comment we got out of DeLon, but what a great comment. And he makes such a good point there, talking about how in the near-death experience, often someone will experience the near-death experience, I'm sorry, the life review of another person. And in addition to that, there are those on this earth still living who have some, by some means, the opportunity to experience someone else's life review. And it's totally understandable why, if that happened, why somebody might assume or think that that was a previous life. And to put a little bit more thought onto that, From my studies of near-death experiences and people's discussions of reincarnation, many of them come back saying, but it's really not like past lives regression or past lives. They say it's more like multiple lives because in their experience, they have this life that seems to be going on the other side of the world with this other individual and this other individual on another part of the world, and it's as if their spirit is somehow experiencing multiple lives at once. And true that if you consider there to be multiple lives, this idea of reincarnation, that you do have to kind of wrestle with this question of, wait a minute, what about those whose multiple lives that they seem to be experiencing are all happening at the same time? Now, of course, you know, from the spirit world and so forth, we recognize that time is very different on that side, that it's not an issue on that side, but that starts to become questionable on this side. And so that question of, well, if I'm living multiple lives, how could I be facing more of those lives at the same time? You know, living at the same time. And so they start having these ideas, well, maybe we're living many lives at any given time, and we rotate through, and it starts getting really, let's just say, difficult to comprehend. And I'm not going to put it past me or anybody to to say that there's many things that we don't comprehend about this life, so I'll grant you that. But it seems to me a much simpler and more palpable explanation to say that we sometimes, either by accident or by some kind of experience or accident, or perhaps just by our own gifts that we haven't fully developed or understand yet, able to tap into some of these things, such as the life review of another person, or perhaps the present life of another person. And so that is, I think, an both interesting and understandable alternative to the view of reincarnation. And I don't want to try to pull down the beliefs of those who do accept reincarnation, and I totally respect that you believe that. I think I understand it better now, having studied these things, than ever before. Because if you had asked me 10 years ago, or if you had told me you believe in reincarnation, I'd have been like, eh? You know, I thought that was like some ancient Asian belief that isn't really a thing anymore. And that totally, you know, my study of this stuff totally blows that away, to say, to the point where I can say, I totally get why you believe that. I totally get it. I do. I really do. I just don't share that belief, and here's why. And that's some of the thoughts that I have about that I've shared. And so I'm not going to think anyone less of anyone who believes it, but those are just a few alternative beliefs. I am grateful also, DeLon, that you shared the experience, that little portion of an experience by your mother, who was my grandma. My grandma was extremely gifted. She had very clearly what in the near-death experience world we could call the after effects of a near-death experience, which is, you know, this spiritual openness to insights and premonitions and little things, you know, just the little things like, you know, the phone is ringing and you know who it is. I mean, or maybe you get this wake up thinking, oh, I forgot that so-and-so had died. And then you get a call later that day that they're in the hospital, and the next day they're dead. You know, it's kind of like this, whoa, okay, you know, I didn't realize that was a premonition, but it clearly was. She had lots of things like that. And this example of it is that he gives of having this dream that was a very vivid dream, and one of the kinds of dreams that she recognized, this is more than a dream. She'd become attuned to herself and her spirit enough to know this was more than a dream, but what was it? She saw somebody in an accident that really looked like her son, and it scared her, obviously. I mean, wouldn't any mother? Well, when she sees in the newspaper a few days later, I don't remember how long he said later, someone who had died in an accident, and she sees this boy who looks very much like her son who had this accident, she's like, oh, probably some relief there, you know. And so the point is, she has this premonition, she has this experience she assumes is her son because it looked like him, and yet her own interpretation of it, while being the only interpretation that is there to have, it'd be her own, you know, she can't go to somebody else and say, what does this mean? Because they didn't have it. It was only her. She's the only one she has to turn to say, what do I do with this? She interprets it as her son. And that interpretation turned out to be wrong. And I think that's a common thing in some near-death experience interpretations, is that it's important to recognize what they experience, but you've got to always take their interpretation of the experience, I don't want to say with a grain of salt, but I would say recognize it as an interpretation of what they're experiencing. So, great, great comment. And I reiterate that, you know, to those who may have this concern about reincarnation, that is a really valid comment. So I'm glad that DeLon brought that up again. And for those of you who may not be familiar with his reference, he says, you know, talking about a point that I had made previously, there is an episode of this podcast that is simply called Reincarnation. And if you go back, it's one of the first maybe 20 episodes. Just go back and find the one called Reincarnation, and you can hear more of those thoughts. And the point that DeLon makes that he points to, that I think is the crux of the whole thing for me, is that I believe that Jesus Christ suffered the sins, the iniquities, the pains, the suffering of every individual who ever lived. I believe that with all of my heart. And I believe that because of what he did, because he suffered what he did, we don't have to keep suffering and banging our heads over and over for eternity. It's just not necessary. through his atonement, we can overcome the sins and the weaknesses that we have. His atonement, I believe, is, in a sense, he has experienced everything that every one of us has ever experienced. You might say he experienced not only the life review, but all of the physical suffering that went with that life review, which is unique. And so I would suggest that because of that, we can put full confidence in his ability to have us overcome all of our problems, and that we don't have to be perfect in this life, but we should strive for the kind of life that he taught us to live, to love one another, to reach out to one another, to serve one another, which is kind of the major message of every life review that I've ever read. The applaud goes to the little acts of goodness, the little acts of trying to be better, trying to love and share and become more and become closer to our Heavenly Father, closer to the earth and its creatures, and especially our fellow people on this earth. So anyway, that was a long comment to an even better comment that was made by Dylan there. So now let's share an experience. Okay, this is the experience of Brad on NDERF.org, which is the Near Death Experience Research Foundation website. He says, I had my first near-death experience when I was a child, perhaps 2 or 3. This would be about 1953. And it involved me drowning. My memories of it were of seeing my body below me. I remember seeing a bright, warm, loving orb above me and my panicked mom and dad below. I didn't know that it was anything to talk about, and no one would have believed me. It never was a thing I felt I had to relate. From that moment on, though, I resisted going to church. I would escape from church every chance I got. It was like trying to shove two magnets together. After I asked in Presbyterian Catechism why a person in Africa who was good and decent and loving and such had no chance of going to heaven just because he hadn't read the Bible, I was kicked out of church. Everyone was so ashamed they couldn't figure out why I felt so good. This was in 1963. I was the biggest anti-church agnostic you ever met. I had no belief in church. I did not go to church except after I was ordered there by my uncle, who was raising me after my father's death to suicide. While in church, in this forced session, wearing a suit my uncle really couldn't afford to give me, a man walked in front of the church. The congregation turned and looked at him. I looked into his eyes, and he had a warm, loving glow about him. He was in sandals and was dressed just like and looked just like the guy hanging behind the pulpit. That he seemed to want to look at the congregation. Then he seemed to want to look at the congregation. When I did, I was sickened. The entire group was staring at him with obvious hate. I looked back at the man, and he looked straight into my eyes and smiled. I smiled back, and he turned and left. After church that day, I walked outside, took off my jacket and tie, never put them back on, nor did I ever go to church again willingly. This was in about 1968. Then in 1971, I was a married guy with one son and was hitching a ride home from my job in a research lab at the University of Michigan. I got a ride in a van, and in the van was a seat running from behind the driver's seat along the driver's side to a seat along the back of the van. I sat in the seat on the side, and a hippie kid sat in the back seat. Someone suddenly, but without projecting fear, was sitting next to me on my left. He talked to me about what was going to happen to me. He said I had a choice of whether or not I had to experience it. We talked in a very serious yet non-threatening way. I told him I would do it. As I got out of the van, he asked me again if I wanted to do it, and I said yes. He told me the number of steps I would take before it would happen. The hippie and driver asked nervously who I had been talking to. Then I said, "Him," and pointed to the seat. The driver turned on the interior light, and there was no one but the driver and the hippie there. I remember they were really concerned for me, but spooked. I took the number of steps in a state of mind that was removed but determined. When I reached the number, I turned and saw a car veer towards a kid on a bike. A person in the back seat swung a pipe at the kid, who ducked his head, and the pipe missed its mark. I stepped out in the road where the car's driver could see me and waved my arm. The car was swerving, and then it sped up and left the pavement, heading right for me. I picked up a handful of gravel and threw it at the car, which swerved, barely missing me. The car stopped, and soon I had been beaten with pipes, and then I felt a pain in my back and in my stomach. I thought I had been shot through and through. I put my hand over my stomach and saw it was covered with blood. This made me think I had been shot, for sure. Then I said to the attackers, "You've killed me!" It was only later I found out that I'd been knifed with a stiletto that severed an artery above my liver. They left, and I remember looking up and seeing a light. I then looked down at my body, and then I was confronted by at least two beings. They were human in appearance, and they seemed to float in midair. I realized I was far above my body and not in an earthly space. The beings tried to keep me from going to the light. I don't know why. They just seemed terrified and didn't want me to go. But I did. I shot up like an arrow through what can only be described as a tunnel. I saw the tunnel as a peripheral blur of stars, and I saw a loving light before me. Then I stopped. I was there in this orb of glowing love and understanding. It didn't seem foreign to me. It was not frightening. It was totally assuring. And there was no feeling of anything but my awe and the love and knowledge and wisdom that this orb projected. In size, it would be not like looking at the sun, but by looking at the earth when you're on it. It was immense and total. And its power was love. I felt a presence next to me, a man, and he asked if I was ready for my life review. I said yes. All of this not a verbal thing, but just knowledge. Then I saw an HO scale train set below of a city. I went to this city and went through my life. I went through every moment and every feeling. I was not afraid, as I was still in the light. I talked with the man about my life, but I do not remember any specifics. I then remember standing, as it were, in the light of the orb of love. I felt the goodness and love and knowledge of it. My mind was in a state of deep, deep concentration of thought. I then went to the 12 beings of greater knowledge. They were in front of me and stood in a row. They were not human. They had no feelings of anything like judgment or authority, but seemed strong in themselves. They seemed taller than me. They wore silver-white robes, and they had white skin and large heads and large eyes. I do not remember them having mouths. Above them was a spirit. It was like a star, as we see one from Earth, but in size appeared the same size as the heads of the beings. The spirit went to my left and hovered above the first being, and I remember it was like a video of knowledge that sprang from the being's hands, which were held in front of them. Each being had something to relate. They opened the knowledge they had when the spirit moved above them. The last being told me what I could do if I came back, and the significance of it. I only remember seeing a young man with his head back in pain, as if his neck was injured. I said, "Oh, Alvin, my son." And they said, "No, not that son." And I realized whom they meant. In 1978, my only other child was born, a son. Then I made a decision to come back to Earth. I remember that it was such a hard decision. It was so difficult because everything there was so beautiful and there was so much love. I had the feeling of free will, yet a feeling of duty was present, of obligation. The second that I realized that, I shot back into my body. I stood and walked to the road and saw the young man on the bike. He was an Asian man. He offered to help, but there was really nothing he could do. I got a ride to the hospital, where the doctor told me I was too weak to operate on, and that I was bleeding to death. He called and told my wife the same thing. I remember laughing about that because I knew I wouldn't die. And I'm going to go ahead and end the account there. I am a little bit short on time for myself right now. But beyond that, he goes on talking about discovering the book Life After Life. And you know, he'd been shy to share any of this with anybody. And the few that he told didn't understand or didn't believe him. And when he read Life After Life, he held it up and said, this is what happened when I was stabbed to me. This is what happened to me. And then he talks about, he heard Daniel Brinkley talk and describing his experience and saying, that's exactly what I experienced, almost precisely what I experienced. And so it's interesting. He goes on to say that he was never religious again, but he did believe in God. And he says, "I do not think that Jesus would want me to think of anything other than a loving spirit." So basically, he's saying he didn't want Jesus. He didn't think Jesus would want him thinking of Jesus as this vindictive, vengeful God that is wanting to, you know, judge him for terrible things he's done. And then he goes on and talks about how he sees the wisdom of Buddha, Jesus, Gandhi, and others who, you know, did great things and so forth. So you know, he became more of a spiritual minded person, even though he didn't become a religious person. There's several things that we could comment on this. I'm very interested in these beings that with large eyes and so forth. I'm not sure what to make of that, except that it makes me think that maybe some people who think they've been abducted actually had a near-death experience. I'll just leave that at that. We do know from other experiences, as well as many religious traditions, that there are cherubs and other kinds of spiritual creatures and beings that are not seen on the earth as, you know, mortal creatures. And so, you know, kind of interesting, all that. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that simply because I'm out of time for today. But I will reiterate, contact me if you've got questions, like to share your experience, or if you'd like to be interviewed. I would love to do interviews, and we can do that over the regular phone. And I will just have my recorder here recording the phone call on speaker so that we don't have some of the technical issues. Apparently, unfortunately, the phone number 970-NDE-CAST gives you 3 minutes. So I'm sorry about that. I wasn't sure exactly how long it would give us. That is way low an amount. So if you've got something to share, please record it on your phone. Use, you know, Easy Voice Recorder or some other app, and then just email it to me or upload it to archive.org and just email me the link, whatever. And I would love to share your experiences, your comments, your thoughts, or just send a huge email that I can read. I would love to read your experience on the podcast. So with that, thank you, all of you, so much again.